You are listening to part two of episode four of the John and Tom Show with Scott Fisk as the guest. Part one, we discussed COVID and a few other issues related to ketamine and Ryan White. We got into some interesting things. The part two, we're going to start talking about the election and the Trump perspective of the election. It's a timely issue. Hope you enjoy. Now we're going to just talk about our own personal opinions because we none of us are, you know, politicians or anything. We're going to talk about the election, the current election.
No!
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh boy, here we go.
Yes. We're here.
See, this we're is here, everyone. This is what's been keeping Scott up at night, you know, and I got to tell you, I honestly, I thought, you know, God, you know, I love Scott to death. I know. And I just don't know where this is going to go. I mean, I had trepidation about this.
I want you to know that I'm not going to speak for myself. I'm going to completely disassociate my opinions. I'm going to just qualify everything I say as the Trump supporter out there.
That's okay, sure. That's fine. That's what we. That's really
your interpretation of the Trump supporter in quotations.
Exactly. No. That's exactly what we're hoping for.
I have notes. Like Tom said, I don't want to dominate the discussion.
Can you just read those notes from start to finish?
And his handwriting's probably as piss poor as mine is because, you know, my wife has said, how do you understand that scribble? I said, what the hell's wrong with you? Can't you read English? You know, and I take it Scott's handwriting's probably no damn better than mine.
It's dentist writing.
Oh, no, physicians are worse. No, I had one time I wrote a prescription.
No, go ahead, John, not you. John, let's talk about the election.
Go ahead. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We're 90 minutes in, and we haven't even gotten to the election.
So you can literally start the podcast here.
I could.
Dr. Fisk, the anesthesiologist.
Or we could make it a two-parter.
Could do a two-parter. Do you feel warmed up? Do you feel like you're warmed up yet?
I feel comfortable. I'm settled in this chair.
Okay, good. You don't even need a break. I mean, that's amazing.
I'm glad you're comfortable. Hell, I've got to sit on a stool.
Hours on end.
I don't know what's in that cup, but whatever it is working.
Oh, geez.
All right. Well, the election. It's been a long year. It's been a long year for many reasons, but the election was completed. It's completed. We're at the point where, what is it, Thursday today? Monday, the Electoral College cast their votes. And I was going to ask you this question, but at this point it seems like it's, I'll ask it anyway. Because you're speaking for all Trump supporters.
Remember that you are a representative of everybody. I don't want to put any pressure on you.
Do you think the election was rigged? Do you think it was rigged?
Do I think it was rigged?
Do you think it was rigged? Do you think there's fraud?
Do I think there's fraud?
Do you think there was? Okay. Do you think there was enough of fraud, more than any other election, to constitute what's happening with the Trump Party?
To change the outcome.
How they're pursuing it legally in the 50 lawsuits.
60.
Right. 60 lawsuits. do you think from what you know, you probably follow it pretty closely. Yeah. Do you think that was warranted? And do you think that where are you at on that?
So you're asking a subtle question, so I hope you're I actually did not think that Trump was going to win the election. Okay. And I know that may sound like, oh my God, like of course, you know, I mean the polls didn't think he was. But I can tell you that the people that I interacted with did not think for even a second that Trump would not win. Okay. So I'm coming from a perspective where I kind of saw the writing on the wall that in the middle of the economic downturn, against the kind of the media that was piling on, that in the middle of the COVID, the general mood of the country, it, you know, whether it was Trump or not, you know, I just think that the president gets saddled with that. And therefore, I just think thought it was going to be a real challenge for him to win re-election in that setting. Okay. So,
but all you said of my you said you had a people that you talked to. Like, who were the people? Are these your friends or like who?
Just my colleagues at work. I mean, I'm in the OR. We chatter, you know, during, you know, hours of, you know, operating, and just the people I interact with at work, because I'm not like confined at home in quarantine. I'm out in my work environment in a, you know, Southside Chicago is not MAGA country. Okay. But, you know,
so all Kentucky, the, would you say the majority of country, your right? doctor friends, the majority of your doctor friends were MAGA people?
Well, I wouldn't say just the people. I mean, not just my, I want to qualify this. I mean, not my like quote unquote friends. I mean, you know, the majority of people here,
everyone,
are MAGA people, like everyone. And, yeah. And I must say that that's very interesting, because I can't tell you, as I follow this and we have all these political discussions about everything in the OR, you know, in the OR environment during mm-hmm. cases and things. And I've often thought and remarked about this, like, you know, we're having all of this basically, you know, you can kind of qualify it as the Fox News sort of opinion about everything that's happening.
Reinforcement,
right?
Yeah.
And to us, it's just like common sense. I mean, you. Right, I mean, right. Who in the world thinks any differently than yeah. this? And I'm not. These are educated
yep.
doctors, surgeons, staff, nurses, patients, everybody. And, you know, whatever you may think of those opinions, I've often just remarked to the whole group, there are, and I always reference you, John, right? Like, my brother-in-law is in California, or these other ORs around the country that are having the exact opposite conversation mm-hmm. from the, and they think that it's just, I just find that very fascinating, that from your, you know, and I guess that kind of speaks to the effort that's being made here, that everyone feels so confident in their logic of how things are going on and their perspective and what they're seeing, that, you know, how could it be so different? And is it really so different in the end?
Uh-huh.
But I guess we'll find out. But I personally don't know if the election was a fraud. Of course, there's always the fraud that takes place, you know, the low levels of fraud or double voting or dead people or voting.
Accidental
or whatever.
Fraud. Too, yeah.
Vote, you know, often vote early and vote often.
The account that accounts for just minor errors in the system, if I had to guess, John, I would say no, that it wasn't a massive fraud. And the reason why is because you would have to believe in some pretty massive conspiracy to think so. And the reason I say that is because, listen, and so when I say I don't know, the point I'm making is that it's possible. But is it likely? I would say it's not likely. And the reason why is that it would have taken a massive coordinated effort by hundreds, if not thousands of people.
Yes.
And there would have been enough of a trail and of an evidence that you could have brought to bear that would have stuck in the legal system. I just believe that it would have been too perfect of a fraud to have gone through without being able to be legitimately challenged outside of Newsmax or Zero right. Hedge or whatever.
Right.
And I make this point that, you know, to the people that actually believe fully that it was fraud, that I just, you know, I don't want to hear it until I bring it to a judge already. Like, I just, whatever, you know, I don't know. Is it possible?
Sure.
Yes. And yeah. So here's my counter argument to the, so if you had asked me this question, John, if you had said, where's the proof that there was yeah, fraud?
Exactly.
Okay. Let's say you asked me that question. And I had this prepared because I was wondering about this.
Okay. Sorry I didn't ask the exact question that you prepared prepared for.
I'm framing it for you. No, thank you. But I mean, this is an important thing that sets up. I had an hour and a half long discussion with one of the urologist yeah. surgeons about this. And he's, the counter question was, and I know this seems a little ridiculous, but think about it. prove that it wasn't.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
prove that it wasn't, and think about what that's communicating on the Trump side. Okay. The Trump perspective is that there's just not enough transparency in the system to have full confidence. So I have a laundry list. I want to just list this off real quick.
I think every president could have said that from the beginning of time, though. Prove that it wasn't.
We're not talking about Jimmy Carter here. Talking about Trump.
I know, okay? But I guess it's just like it's – okay, go ahead.
But see, Jimmy Carter didn't have every media establishment piling on. Okay, hold on a second. Let me go back. So I have my little cheat sheet into three categories, okay? One is conspiracy ideas, okay?
Yeah.
One is observable fact, and one is disputed facts, okay? So let me talk about what I've heard.
I want to hear from your observable facts. That sounds like a good place to
observable start. Facts, okay? You want to hear – which one do you want to hear from first? You want to hear from the observable facts?
Sure.
Okay. So
yeah, I don't want to take you off your – if you were going in a direction, I want you to continue in that direction.
The direction I was going was the conspiracy, okay? And this is the stuff that I don't really fully buy into myself personally, but a lot of people I talk to do. I've encountered it. I've seen it.
Sure.
And it's what's out there that I'm hearing – that people are discussing. So this is the quote unquote conspiracy, right? So
from regular people,
regular Trump. So at this point, there's a lot of question about the Dominion machines. Okay. The counting machines, people think that they don't have confidence that the Dominion machines could not have been somehow manipulated or programmed to stuff the ballot, okay? Whether that's true or not, I've heard all this stuff about, you know, confiscating servers in Germany. I don't even know what this is about. Confiscating servers in Germany. Yeah. I've heard about machines that have had error rates over 50% that you've had to manually compute. Yeah. I've heard of secret programming that you go into the machines and you load the same amount of votes. And, you know, it loads that it proportionally gives more votes to Biden over Trump. I'm just telling you, this is all stuff I've heard. So that somehow, you know, of course, you hear about the Venezuela connection and whatever that's about. So there's just a lack of confidence.
Sure.
In the
because they lost. If they would have won, they would have never brought that up.
Okay.
Right.
I've also heard. Well,
when Bush won with the hanging chads, they never brought that stuff up. Like it's always about whoever. It's situational. It's not really. They don't really believe that there's fraud happening. They're trying to manufacture something because these voting things have been going on for. I'm just gonna stop. You just keep
going. No, sure. I'm just trying to. This is the conspiracy realm.
Okay? I know. I'm thinking about it and trying to interpret it.
Because I should have gone to the kind of observable facts, because what I think the facts that you see feed into.
You started with conspiracies, people that you work with, maybe or maybe not, believe. And they're talking to you about this stuff.
I also want to say that I've heard of, and I've seen videos of testimony by statisticians that have talked about the vote tallies. So on election night and into the next day, as Trump had certain leads, they were watching the updates, and on one or two, you know, I can't tell you how many times like they've seen, well, even on like the CNN feed in real time on TV, like Biden would get like 150,000 votes and Trump would get like minus 500 or some ridiculous. Yeah. And it was like, and I would just be like, well, maybe they were just loading it.
Counting cities instead of rural or something. Yeah.
But I've seen witness testimony in these town halls or legislator testimonies by statisticians. And they had one where the statistician said, look, you know, over this hour of time, they were loading all these votes in this county or whatever. and Biden got 300,000 votes and Trump got 3,000 or something. Like, and he said the statistical probability of this is zero. I mean, 0. Whatever, infinity. And I mean, there's just that kind of over and over and over again. You hear about just mathematical improbabilities of the catch-up game that Biden did the following day, okay, as those votes were counted up in the, by the way, in the wee hours of the night at 3 a.m. when everybody was basically asleep and blah, blah, blah. Okay, again, this is the conspiracy category, okay? I've heard of affidavits and eyewitness testimony of trucks coming in at 2 and 3 in the morning full of boxes of ballots.
So let me ask you a question. Let me just slow you down there for a second.
Sure.
I don't think that the American people have ever questioned the elections before. And do you think that this is all these things you're talking about? You're going granular. You're finding like local little individual pieces, individual events that happened all over the country. Maybe they're true, maybe they're not. But do you think that this has been going on since day one, since 1776? You know, like, has this been happening? We're just now starting to like realize maybe there has been election fraud going on all along, and maybe we just are starting to, you know, it could, because if it's happening now, if you really believe that it's happening now, why would it not have happened for the last 200 years? You know.
Okay. So I mean, I can't imagine this is the first cycle where it hasn't necessarily been challenged. But look, let's forget history, because I think, I mean,
forget history. What?
That came out wrong. The point is that.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I think we're talking about the Trump dynamic, and I do think Trump is a unique figure in the history as a president of our country. Okay, and so what I mean, to answer your question properly, I really have to take a step back, okay? I have to take a step back. And I can remember, I used to, by the way, listen to this as a Trump supporter. I used to be a big NPR junkie. I'd listen to that NPR all the time or whatever.
That surprises me, Scott.
I know. Not anymore, not so much. But I can tell you that the day or whatever after Trump was elected president-elect in 2016, NPR was interviewing people on the ground and all the kind of the people that were disillusioned by the result. And they were interviewing this guy, and I was a little bit taken aback, right? Because I didn't quite appreciate the dynamic that was being set up at the time. And the guy was just basically like, I was so dismayed and blah, blah, but now I realize, you know, it's just going to be a battle. Like, it's going to be a resist at all costs. He was basically this never Trumper. I mean, he was just a citizen, but he was like a never Trumper, resist at all costs person. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was listening to this interview and it kind of struck me. I was like, well, wow. I mean, he hasn't even done anything yet. Of course, you know, you could argue he's an asshole. I mean, the way he talks about people and shit, but like, you know, what has he even said he was going to do that's so unacceptable that we're going to resist at all costs?
He said that he's going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. That's one thing. Yeah. He said
well,
many,
I mean,
many.
We could talk about policy,
well, he
but,
said many, many other talking, things I mean, during. But I think. But I'm not trying to defend the guy. But there might have been a reason why that guy said that. Because there's things that were like outlandish. There were things that were kind of unusual. And I think for people who are liberal people, it was like offensive. And so just when Obama became president in 2008, the entire Senate, led by Mitch McConnell, said, no matter what Obama does, we're going to say no. So,
right.
I mean, we're talking chicken and egg, like
government.
Chicken and egg, Palestinian, Israeli, who started it kind of stuff. But, you know, like, I mean, there's sort of a thing, you know, who started it, right?
Sure.
That goes way back.
I don't want to even bring this up as an observable fact, but I'll say that as the impression is now from a Trump perspective, that Trump had the intelligence community was literally spying on him before he was even elected, that the Democratic Party or the Hillary campaign had requested or had literally commissioned this dossier to be made that was used as a justification to basically obstruct Trump by throwing him through this like Russian hysterical hoax situation. I don't want to say loaded.
I mean, there's people that went to jail for it, so I don't know if it was a true hoax.
Hold on, I want to answer your question because this is different because, you know, we didn't drag Obama through like a Russian hoax to obstruct his presidency for 2 years. And that was all you heard about on the news over some basically manufactured information.
There had
about
to be some evidence because people went to jail for it. Several people went to jail for this.
No. People lied.
Something happened. I mean, there's more than it's there's something there, right? Like, why would somebody lie and go? Why would Manafort? Why would people lie and go to jail for something that doesn't, for a hoax? Why would they do that? Why would they lie and go to jail for a hoax? Why would anybody do that?
I think that, you know, so I don't know much about Manafort, so I can't claim to be. I'm trying to give you impressions, right? I'm not an expert on the Russian investigation. I do know that as a whole, it was basically not of much substance. And then when the FBI and the CIA and God knows whoever investigative team comes in and, you know, puts the burners on you for 2.5 years, that they find malfeasance or they get you tied up in some sort of obstruction, right? Like, oh, you obstructed the investigation, or they entrap you, you know, somehow, or maybe they did find some BS like they did on the one lawyer who was like Trump's fixer or whatever.
Cohen,
you know,
Michael Cohen.
Oh, what did he do? He like violated some campaign finance rule. Oh,
the
boy.
The
point is what, like,
mafia,
that Trump,
mafia lawyer.
the point is Stormy that, like, the claim was that Trump conspired with the Russian government for foreign interference to beat Hillary Clinton. I mean, that was, you know, I don't care what they got, like,
was
Paul
that,
Manafort.
Was that really what it was about?
Yeah, actually, that's what I thought.
What's the term that, not conspired to beat Hillary Clinton? It was, there's a word I can't think of, but let's move on from this. I think we're getting a little bit too far into this stuff that it's not really relevant to what we're talking about that much.
When you ask a question, the question is like, okay, why don't we accept the results of the election now?
It's because
we never felt, I mean, I have to keep saying, we never felt Trump was given a chance to start, right? The whole anti-Trump phenomenon, the Never Trumpers, when he was starting, he was investigated for the Russian, and then he was just like, all you heard about on the news for years was the Russian stuff. And then next thing you know, he's getting impeached for that silly conversation he had with the Ukrainian, you know, leader guy who, you know, there's more foreign. And then they go through this big facade about impeachment.
Yeah.
So there was never any sort of acceptance of Trump as president. So
I know you're on a great path there, but do you think there's any relevance to the fact that he always considered himself a victim, and he always said that people are picking on him all the time. Every press conference, you know, he's calling out reporters for being hacks who have been in the industry for 30 years. But when you look at somebody like Obama, and I hate to do this as I feel like I'm being a liberal guy here, but he never did that. And people were very harsh on him. But he just kind of blasted through it. But Trump brings attention to his supposed victimhood, right? And that grew the victimhood, that made him seem like a victim, and he loves that victimhood, right? And he's always picking fights with people, how did that have an impact on his image? And how, you know, you say, and a lot of people say this, that he was never given a chance. And I do think that the media was quite harsh on him. But
this is true.
The media was quite harsh on him. But he did, you know, sort of take it. He sort of didn't handle it very well, right? I think he I was always complaining about your, you know, you wouldn't ask that to this guy or this guy, you know, like sure. Professional people don't do that. They just, you gotta, you know, he went to the basest level and live there, and he's name calling people, you know,
sure,
he would name call,
question.
Right?
I totally understand your question, right? I get it. So
did that have an impact on the overall image of him and how people think that he was a victim, how people think that he wasn't given a chance?
Well, okay. So let me qualify myself as someone who I am not a member of the cult of Trump's personality. Okay. Yeah.
But can you please speak from it?
And that's important to distinguish because I know plenty of people that love Trump's personality. Okay. There is a base of supporters that he has that they just love how he conducts himself. Right. I mean, it's like whatever. Now, I think, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that. So I wouldn't consider myself a member of that club. However, I do consider myself someone who would support a lot of what he does or what he's doing. Sure. I mean, you know, so I've reflected on that a little bit, you know, and I'm speaking to your question about, okay, well, is he too, like, is he a victim? I interpret that idea of victimhood as somebody who's like just kind of picking fights and why is everybody, you know, piling on me and he's a victim, but he's picking fights, right? The question is a little, is the personality a little bit, you know, from a Trump supporter's perspective that really doesn't love it, the question is a little bit of a necessary evil. And so Trump's purported mission in the election and as he was campaigning is this outside person who's coming in to take on the establishment, right? To take on the deep state, to drain the swamp, right? Let's use the phrase, to drain the swamp. And you have the population that's like, I'm kind of sick of the swamp, which, you know, by the way, the swamp exists, right? The kind of, you know, career bureaucrats that never really changed. There's the bureaucracy, the inside establishment.
Pretty much
really
every politician.
What's that?
Pretty much every politician.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, shit. And Trump's no like traditional politician, right? As Trump is coming in, he's kind of, you know, taking on the swamp. And I think that Trump, I mean, you know, he's going to leave office. I mean, you can argue that point, whatever. But as he leaves office or whatever, what's the Trump legacy? I mean, one of the Trump legacies at least going to be is to have what revealed a lot more about that swamp. But secondly, to reveal how the press and the media is working in concert with that swamp. I mean, they've really shown, in my opinion, in the Trump supporters, the true colors of the politicized news. I mean, I don't care how pissy Trump gets with them. They have one job, right? To fairly present the facts as they are or to try to make an honest assessment of the situation, right? They have no business.
I don't think the media was this polarized before, though. I think it was slightly polarized. Fox was definitely Fox and CNN was CNN. But once he took in office, it became extreme.
Well, you know, I think as far as the media goes, and I see this on both sides of the fence, and it really bugs me, is that it seems like news reporting in general has become less about news reporting and editorial opinions. Yeah. You know, I see that on both sides of the fence. I mean, you know, everything that Trump says on the right is gospel, it's true. And on the left, all we hear is that everything he's done is evil and all this. I mean, so I don't feel like I would rather just get the news and then be allowed to make my own conclusions from it.
It's hard to find these days.
It is. It absolutely is.
I had a question for you that just popped up in my head.
This is it.
I do have a question just popped up in my head. Do you think there is a Republican Party anymore? Or is it just Trump Party?
you know, they've talked about Trump coming back, you know, in 4 years or whatever. I don't ever see that happening, right? The problem with Trump as someone who's enacting a conservative or populist agenda now, or whatever you call it, is that his base support kind of really caps at 40% or whatever. He just can't quite, and no. You know, he pisses too many people off, so there's no safe margin there. So I mean unless the country goes to hell and they want the good old Trump days back.
Well, I'm talking about right now. Is there a Republican Party or is it a Trump party?
Oh, I think Trump has completely changed the ball game as it relates to what constitutes a Republican Party.
The only people I follow on Twitter are Republicans for Biden. I think they're the interesting people because they're sign of the centrists and they make the most sense to me. You know, like I understand all the leftists, I understand all the rightist people, but like the Republicans for Biden, that's the interesting part for me, because like they are disavowing Trumpism, which is a little different than Republicans. You know, I don't think he has the same views as Republicans. I think Trump would have chosen any party that was ripe for it at the time. I think he would have. Whatever party was, because in 2016 the Republican Party was pretty weak, and he pounced on it, you know. And I don't think he cared which party he was going to join. He's just Trump. Trump is Trump. Period.
Well, and, you know.
Okay, we're really talking about. I mean, not so much the election, but Trump in general. And I'd like to ask you.
I'm kind of meandering a little. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. I'd like to ask you, because I was reflecting on this again because I couldn't sleep after you texted me. For everything that Trump is, I mean, and I can kind of distill it down to one of the, you know, well-known phrases, but, you know, what is Trump's policy at its core in just a sentence, or what is the Trump doctrine? Like, what is the Trump doctrine that you, as you understand it? Because
no idea. Okay. It's no. Okay. It's Tom? Narcissism.
Trump to me is an enigma. I mean, he always has been. I didn't vote for him in 2016, but you know, I'll make quite an admission here, fellas. I didn't vote for either one of them because I was not impressed with Hillary and I was not impressed with Donald.
Tom's a true independent.
Yeah, no, this is true. No, I couldn't because I feel it this way. When I cast a vote, that means I want this person to hold this office, okay? And I really couldn't get behind either one of them. And I thought, well, okay, maybe Trump as president's not so bad. You know, he is a political outsider. He doesn't owe political dues to anybody. Maybe this is a good thing. You know, maybe it's a good thing having somebody come from the outside who has not been on the inside. And there were a lot of things that Trump did that I agree with. I mean, he did a great job. He's done a great job on trying to cut down the horrendous trade deficit we have with China. He's really emphasized American industry. And quite frankly, the economy's done pretty well under him. But the problem that I have is, and like I said, I've been pretty ambivalent. And up until now, I have always recognized Trump as president, and I have respected him as president. But now I have zero respect because of all this garbage that he's been spewing out since the election. That's the part that's really got me.
I need to pivot to my observable facts, which might be debatable facts in the end, but I'd like to hear about it. But I want to speak to that, Tom. I want to speak to why it's so hard for a Trump person to accept the outcome of the election, whether it was fraudulent or not, number one, okay? But I do want to quickly summarize the Trump policy as I see it, as a Trump supporter who's not a member of the personality cult, okay? The Trump doctrine isn't his campaign slogan generically, make America great again. okay, as I see it. Because, you know, what I mean, what is Make America Great Again is a little bit like, well, right, well, when white people are in charge persecuting black people. And I mean, what are we hearkening back to? The good old days when everybody, you know. So I think, and I don't think Trump thinks like it. I think Trump is saying, when he's saying Make America Great Again, the Trump doctrine is Make America Great Again by putting America first, okay? It's an anti-globalist message. And you put America first by enforcing the border. You secure the border, okay? Whether you think a wall works or not, that's, you know, you could debate that on its own merits. But how do you put America first? You renegotiate trade deals. You take America out of these never-ending wars. I mean, think about it. This is stuff he's done, all right? You try to emphasize the repatriation of American manufacturing and emphasize that blue-collar worker in that respect, blah, blah, blah. You put America first. I mean, it's – You it's get like, the United like, Nations, you know, like you first. Get the, you get NATO, right? To, I mean, what the hell, you know, we're a part of NATO and we're like paying for 99.9% of the budget. And you're like, no, wait a minute. That's
oh, hell, we've right. always done that. We've always done that.
Well, I know, but I mean, just the point is.
I get your point, Scott. I sure. do. I'm sorry. Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, fine. Thank you. But that's kind of, as I understand it, why, you know, it's the Brexits of the world, right? Like, why don't we just, you know, we can have a little diversity. We don't have to have a one world order just yet. We don't have to have open borders and blah, blah, blah. Let's just be the United States or let's just be Britain. We don't have to, anyways, have a Eurozone or whatever. But I wanted to speak to these quote unquote debatable. So to Tom's point, he was kind of respecting the president until he's questioning the integrity of the election. Okay. And so.
I don't know about that. We might have to think about that one. And I know he said that, but he might have to talk to you a little bit about that while I go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I've never been, I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. Of course, I sure as hell didn't vote for him this time, obviously. I mean, that's a given. But it's what has bothered me, Scott, more than anything. He's done some good things. I'm not a Trump, well, I guess I'm anti-Trump now, and I really wasn't so much anti-Trump before. But this stuff now of, oh, you know, they stole the election from me, it's crooked. Now we've brought into question, but what he's done is he's brought into question the integrity of elections in this country. And this country is all about democracy, is all about elections and free voice and all that. And he's got followers that are willing to go. And again, the left does too. And they're no more innocent, but taking to the streets with firearms and whatever, for Christ's sake, over this. I mean, come on. You know, can you back off? And he told the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by and all that stuff. And that, to me, and I could be wrong here, but it sounds to me like he's supporting and supporting these folks and pushing them forward in this. And that's the part that bothers me. It's the divisiveness, I guess. You know, sure. that's the part that I can't deal with. I mean, I'm not into violence, you know. I mean, I'm an old hippie, for Christ's sake. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm into peace, love, and dope, baby, but I'm not
I came back in a good spot.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. You know, I'm not into firearms and all that.
I watched that debate, right? Okay. And I swear to God, you know, Trump isn't always playing four-dimensional chess, right? Like, I think sometimes he's just kind of, you know, thinking off the cuff. He may not even be that savvy about all the subtleties of things. I say that up front because I swear in my impression of the way that took place was, I don't even think he knew who the Proud Boys were when they asked him that question. Like, they asked him that question. He's like, what are you going to do about this group or whatever? And he's like, I don't know. Just wait. Just stand back and wait, see what happens, you know?
Yo, and they're like,
you know, he's just like, what the hell? I mean, and then the next thing you know, he's like, I didn't know who the hell they were. And I think it's very within the realm of believability that he doesn't know who the hell the Proud Boys were. I mean, well, I just think
it's possible because he only knows who he is.
That's my opinion. Okay.
Well, that could be shot.
What's that?
I said that could be. I mean, you make a point. He may have said, I know who these guys are, but I really don't know who these guys are.
That is a big defense for people on Trump, is that he's so dumb. He doesn't know.
Dumb
is the wrong word. It's ignorant. He's ignorant.
I'm just saying that specific comment that he made that made him look like a, well, boy, I tell my white supremacist friends that right. are armed yeah. to stand
and neo-fascists.
But
he was just kind of like, whatever, you know.
But this is a common argument, though. I think people do use this a lot. They use it and they say, he just didn't know.
No. I didn't say it like that.
No, I'm not saying you, but I'm not saying you said that. But like a lot of people do. They just didn't. He just didn't know. He's just okay. He's ignorant.
He's got all these fans out here to know about.
Speaking generalities, you talk about the divisiveness. You talk about the violence. Okay, I do understand that before the election took place, they were boarding up businesses, right?
Right.
In anticipation of violence and all this other stuff. I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that they weren't boarding up businesses because Trump supporters were going to go riot, okay? That is not happening, all right? And John incidentally sent me a WhatsApp, you know, a video on WhatsApp, you hear that WhatsApp, or, you know, we need a sponsor. WhatsApp video. Sent me a video on WhatsApp several months ago, and he's like, what the hell is going on here? And he sent me this video of, like, you know, some like paramilitary people and, you know, army fatigues, you know, a dozen of them in downtown Louisville with their mullets and AK-47s. I mean, the biggest rednecks ever. Patrolling the street,
well,
you know,
Scott,
raising
the bus.
I think it was in the middle of the lockdown. There was like no one within 100 yards of them. But the point was, it's like, what's going on? This shit really scares me. And I'm just like, I don't know. So, I don't support, you know, people with AK-47.
Okay, this is a great, I'm glad you brought this up, dude, because Tom and I have been talking about this. And we've been kind of, I feel like we've been getting a little somewhere on it a little bit because, you know, you're talking about Antifa on the left, and you're talking about the right wing, multiple groups on the right, right? And those are the extreme groups, and they sort of just kind of get together and battle it out, right? But that's like, what, less than 1%, 0.5% of the population. How many people are actually in those groups? It's very, very small. But they get all the press, they get all the media, and everybody thinks that the other side supports those people, and it becomes this big thing where, we're going to have a civil war and all this crap. No, it's these extreme groups. You got extreme groups on both sides, and what's happening is they're fighting each other, and then you got protesters in the middle
I support some of what you're saying, or but I mean, all of this kind of rioting that took place, which, you know, by watching the Chris videos, that it's multifactorial. It's a lot more about socioeconomic injustice as much as it is about racial injustice and all this other stuff. Lack of opportunity. Everyone's cooped up in the COVID lockdown, and people are just out to, you know, show some, you know. But I mean, goodness gracious, like, as it relates to division, like, you know, because even Dan Carlin, like you said, you know, he was talking about, well, this guy is always turning up the temperature, right? Like, I was so disturbed because you know how much I respect old Dan, right? Like, when I heard him come out for Biden, and not because I disagreed with his points, but just because I felt it was unbalanced, and he's usually so on point.
And everybody
with
you know is a Trump supporter.
Right. Well, I mean, so well, not,
makes it
not
hard
everybody.
To talk about it.
But I thought it was, So the analogy that I've tried to, come up with is that, you know, Trump's been accused of raising the temperature of the stuff, right?
Right.
And I've certainly seen him give speeches about unity and coming together, just like Biden. What the hell? And Biden is out there cursing the Republican Party now even too. So he's not, whatever. But the point is that Trump is like the pile of wood, right? In my opinion, Trump, you know, and you have the never Trumpers or the resist at all cost people that I, in my opinion, are lighting that fire. So I don't, Trump is the controversial figure, but as it stands, that doesn't make him responsible for the division. It's the people that say, well, you're unacceptable. Like, Trump was duly elected in 2016. Half of the country said, that's not acceptable.
A little less than half. A little less than half, actually.
Well, I'm
3 million less than half.
Trump the divisive figure? Is Trump or is the person that's saying, I don't accept that. And by the way, you know, if you win again, I'm going to go and, you know, set fire to the whole block. Well, or I'm going to pull down all the statues, or I'm going to, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Or have a civil war.
So this has been a big subject in the conservative discussions that I go through is that, look, you know, what is the shy Trump voter, right? Like all the polls were wrong. Well, why were the polls wrong, right? Well, either it was sinister, number one, or number two, they had no mechanism to account for the shy Trump voter. What does the Trump voter represent? Like that represents in its base form, it's a censorship, right? Oh. We don't live in a free society where we can express support for the sitting president without receiving scorn and ridicule or getting, you know, I mean, the shy Trump voter is afraid to express support for that opinion that is supported by the president because of the absolutely piling on and the ridicule and the scorn.
Think about this shy Biden voter who lives in Lexington, Kentucky.
The Twitter and social mob is going to imbue on them.
But what about the shy Biden voter in Lexington, Kentucky? Is he allowed to talk about Biden? Like, imagine a doctor who supported Biden in your group. Would that be okay?
I have one.
He's
very much that way. But you know what? He was still somehow represented in the polls, right? Like, I mean, you know, the polls, right?
It goes both ways. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you're. No one's talking. I mean, I suppose in any given circumstance, if I moved to, you know, San Fran, you know, I wouldn't want to walk.
You'd be the shy Trump voter. Yeah. There's a lot of Trump people in San Francisco. No,
he'd be
a lot of money there.
Be underground. No, in San Fran.
I live there.
I know you do.
I lived there for 8 years, and there's a lot of Trump people in San Francisco. Okay.
You are kidding me.
There's a lot of Trump people.
John, I wouldn't wear a MAGA hat in Lexington, Kentucky. Why invite the scorn of the anti-Trump mob? Like, that's just going to be like, you're a racist. You're a bigot.
Well, yeah, it's like wearing a
neo-fascist.
Yeah, whatever that, you know.
It's like going to a 49ers game and wearing a Raiders thing or something. Yeah, it's the same concept.
Yeah, that'd be like, you know.
Or Seahawks or something, you know. It's just this sort of divisional thing. You know, we just decide to take sides.
Well, you know, Scott, while we're talking about this, you realize, of course, you know, you're from Indiana. You were born and raised here, and this, like I said, the first podcast I called Indiana the National Republican Capital of the U.S. and I was wrong. It's the Mecca. I mean, it is the Mecca of Republicanism. This was the first state, the very first state on election night that called for the presidential election. They called for Trump. Very first one.
Hey, Tom, now tell me, does Indianapolis vote blue?
Blue.
Indianapolis votes blue. So, this is true.
So you're still living in a bastion and of
in 2008 they did vote for Obama too. So
that's right. Yes, they did.
I don't want to hear your sad story about being surrounded by the enemy. Go move to
I'm pretty sure Mississippi's got you on that one. I'm pretty sure Mississippi could beat you.
Listen, man, my wife is a Republican.
That's true. That's true.
My son-in-law, my daughter, my son-in-law, you know, I am the odd man out here, you know, and, you know, but it's so funny that it's like I said, that we do this podcast from Indiana because we're obviously leaning.
Yeah, we're in MAGA country.
Well, here's the deal. Exactly. My goal is that we don't have to talk about politics in about 2 or 3 months. Unfortunately, I think we will, but my goal is that every day it's not in our face. You know, we're not hearing all these crazy things going on all the time. It's been a reality 4 years, reality TV show. Our government has been a reality TV show for 4 years, and I'm ready for that to stop. I want that show to be canceled. You know, right. I am ready to move on from that. You know,
a little bit of a bitter pill here. Okay. So the bitter pill from the Trump. So, you know, you texted me about, well, you know, let's, you know, this is the bridge, the gap. Let's understand one another. Let's move forward. Right. Like, so my question is, well, where the hell were you in 2016 to bridging the gap to the Trump supporter to understand where we're coming from to try to push forward in something that was good for the,
you know, well, give me an example of that.
Now that he's like leaving office, and
example of that. Like, what would have been a something that I could have latched onto in 2016?
Well, you want to heal the country and come together, right? But that's because your candidate won.
I did not really. I was not enthusiastic about Hillary. I voted for her, but I was not enthusiastic. I was an anti-Trumper because I known Trump since the 90s, and he's an insane person. And he was on Howard Stern. He was a whack packer. He's a crazy person, and I don't want to get into it right now because I know it's sensitive for a lot of people.
No, but he's obviously crazy.
He's crazy.
In his own way,
he's crazy, and right? I respect the presidency. I respect our country, and I knew it was gonna cause our country to go into a tailspin for 4 years. I knew it, and I didn't want it.
I think that's a false premise. I don't think our country's gone into a tailspin.
I think it has in some ways. Yes, it has. I think in other ways it's been fine. Like, but
why has it gone into a tailspin? Because the press just decided that it was unacceptable for Trump to be president, and they raised hell for 4 years.
Do you want me to answer it? This is the way I look at it. Is that like I knew Trump back in the 90s and early 2000s, and I saw him as a crazy person, and you know I had a feeling that the country was sort of going to get into his brain and become this like weird reality TV, world. You know, and that's kind of what has happened. I mean, his tweets are all fantastical, like sensational. They're lie. I mean, he lies, but everybody knows he lies, so it's not real. It's not like it's sort of this alternate universe that he lives in, and we're all having to deal with this. Some people have allowed themselves to go into that world and believe it's true. You know, and I know I'm talking in like vagaries, right?
No,
and,
I understand everything you're saying very clearly.
Yeah, good. not everybody does, and I don't mean to. You know, I'm speaking very generally and vague, but I'm sad that I don't think the presidency should be that way. The presidency should be a charismatic person who speaks to the people and the world in a way that is professional, and it gives people confidence. It doesn't need to be in the news every day. It doesn't need to be exciting. He's like, oh, Biden didn't get any people coming to his thing. I'm like, who cares? It's not about that. It's not a popularity contest. Okay. We're here. A president is sort of the manager of the country. He's just sort of like making sure that everything's working, and he's the head. He's the one that goes and talks to other countries. He gives speeches to the people of the country, and it's not what he. I think the presidency is not what Trump thought it was. It's not. He's not a CEO. It's not. That's not what this is. It's way more complicated than a business. This isn't a business. The United States is not a business.
So you're essentially describing Trump's style and his personality in many respects.
Yeah.
And I would not I mean, in fact, I would agree with you on most of everything you just said. I don't know nothing that I would might disagree with in anything you said. So I think maybe one of the differences would be then that, you know, and I don't know your general political philosophy on every little issue or policy matter, but I think the difference between you and me is that you kind of ignore that or you accept it to support policy matters and agendas that you generally support. I mean, that's what it amounts to.
Well, I think it's important. So one of the questions let me read one of the actual questions I had, because you just touched on it. Yes. Should a president's words and behavior matter?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yes. And so I think that even though it isn't the most important thing, it does matter. Okay. Our policy is very important. We all agree. How a president views democracy, capitalism, and all these things, and it's very important. But
let's put it this way: I would rather have Trump's authenticity, even if he's, you know, in some fantasy land a third of the time, with his policies that we support generally, than some bureaucrat, lifelong politician who just spews bullshit constantly.
Why?
And it's completely insincere. Trump won based on his sincerity.
But why? Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because.
What are you going to get out of that?
What are you going to get out of that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting a, you know, it has more to do with being tired of the facade of the politician that literally just says whatever they want. That it's just a big show.
I'm tired of these anesthesiologists that just administer drugs all the time. That's just that's just what they're supposed to do. Can't they do something else? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, just a joke, man.
It's a joke.
Offended. I'm trying to state it in a way that makes sense. I guess
politicians are sort of just that way.
You know? Even if he's out there and wacky, his sincerity was meaningful to the people that voted for him. If he's not Trump, he's nothing, right? He's Trump, and he's just not that politician that's just going to be up there and be a total fake. I can't tell you, even during the Republican primaries in 2016. That the talking heads were saying Trump won because of that very everybody else up there
100%.
Just 100% talking 100%. Points and all this BS.
Oh yeah,
he's up there speaking his mind. And by the way,
yes,
as a policy matter and as a president, he did what he said he was going to do.
For the
most part, what he was capable of doing.
You think about how much money he spent, like the deficit, the. You know, the deficit's higher than any.
Okay, so we're not talking. No one ever accused him of being a fiscal conservative.
Yeah. Oh man, this is true.
And you know, that's a big thing with the whole peak prosperity thing, and you know, all the bailout money and blah blah. And by the way, I think
it's COVID. It's not his fault that COVID happened. I mean, you had to do these bailouts. There was still deficit there, but. Go ahead.
I mean, he's the biggest spender. You know, every president, the next president's the biggest spender in history.
If you look at
the Great Reset,
there's actually a graph that shows Republicans, Democrats.
You can look at it
where the deficit goes, but
the philosophy's always been if you don't have enough money, hell, just print more.
That's what we're doing now.
It's like we just if you don't have enough money, just kick it up at the just kick up the production of new dollar bills, because not that they're worth anything, but you know it's just
probably going to be going to Bitcoin soon.
Oh God!
So, without getting into all my like micro points, and some may come up here and there.
True.
Think about, so this idea that, you know, Trump, you know, as I'm trying to say, is sincere, at least trying to follow through with what he said he was going to do. Like, you know, he moved the perfect example is like, well, ending these wars best he could, or trying to pull these troops out. He moved the capital of Israel to Jerusalem, you know, even though every other politician just gives that. I mean, this stuff that he said, I'm going to do it, and hell, I'm going to do it, or I'm going to try, you know, the stuff that he was capable of doing, and is, I'm going to challenge China. I'm going to try to repatriate.
I do like the China stuff. I like the energy towards China, and I like the energy to bring back manufacturing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I like that. And that's one of the things that I wish that, and I hope that Biden could bring back with, and maybe there's two or three things of Trump's policies, like Scott, you were mentioning, you had listed a long list for me the other day about, of all the things that you liked about Trump. And I was like, what do you like about him? And so you list all the, like the bringing back manufacturing. And globalization is something I mentioned it to Tom the other day, as something that I'd like to explore, because I think that, I think that 20 years ago, globalization might've been thought of as a good thing. And it's totally nobody's fault for thinking it wasn't, or it was or wasn't. But nowadays, you know, things have changed, and maybe it's time to reevaluate globalism. And I don't really want to be a totally isolated country where we're like, I don't think Trump's idea of a completely America first in every possible way, like that's the same thing Germany said in the 30s and 40s. But I don't want it to be necessarily that way. We have to have a smart approach to this. I think we have to be smart about it and think about, because things have changed. And I think that maybe some of the things that Trump said about bringing manufacturing back and prioritizing our country, because our economy was hurt by some of that outsourcing to China and some of the trade deals that we did. It was hurt. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's no disputing that, I think. So we have to, and I'm not an expert on any of that, but I, on a surface level, I could say I believe that, you know.
Well, you know, we touched on globalization a little bit the other day, and I have to admit that I have, I get the general gist of globalization, but I don't really understand it that well. And I really wish, and this is why, for one thing, like we've got Scott calling in today, this is great. You know, I want to get people in the know that can really educate both of us on globalization. I mean, I, like I said, I've got the premise, but maybe how it works. Scott,
my brother-in-law is a big businessman over here in Lexington, but, you know, it's, you know, when the pandemic hit and we're kind of getting pissy with China and, you know, the China virus and all this stuff. By the way, we make like 99% of your pharmaceuticals, by the way, you know. Oh, well, shit, you know, maybe, you know. I mean, it can't be healthy from just a national security standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, do we even make steel anymore is the question. I don't know what we do and we don't do, except that, you know, we definitely export a lot of the stuff that we used to do for ourselves that we should be a little bit more self-sufficient with. And that's, I mean, if I don't have a greater understanding than that general summary, I mean, that's a conclusion, right? Like, you know, somebody smarter than us should decide what we need to bring back home. And also just, you know, the supply chain, right? Like, I'm no like uber capitalist, you know, the problem with capitalism, and I've listened to enough TED Talks to like, you know, get some feedback about this. Capitalism in its nature creates too many winners and losers, right? Like,
true.
Right? I mean, it's like winners and losers, right? And then what else is capitalism? Well, you're maximizing profits, and that's supposed to be to the greater good of all society, right? Like, as you're creating more choice and more variety and more stuff for everybody because of everybody's the market forces, right? And that's supposed to create,
right.
You know, on the face of it, it actually does do that. But, you know, we're not in a true capitalist society right now. I mean, we have all these social, you know, because we're like a compassionate country. Like we have the social safety net,
yes,
to an extent, as good as any
so
other.
So you're saying if we took away Social Security, Medicare, and welfare, then capitalism would work?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Are you saying if we took away Social Security, welfare, and Medicare, then it would, then capitalism would work, and there would be no wealth gap?
No.
No, I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that capitalism is cruel. I mean, I think, there is a human nature here, right? Like, how do you reward people who are more industrious, who are maybe smarter, who are more innovative? You know, that's what capitalism is supposed to reward.
Yes.
You know, human initiative.
Competition is good. Competition is good. Competition is good. And human initiative, yes.
But the problem with capitalism is we're getting a bigger and bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots. And that's the problem. And the problem, but then if you go to the other extreme, you go to communism, everybody's broke.
Thanks for joining us for part two of episode 4 with Scott Fisk. Tried to stay on topic with the election, but as usual, veered off a bit and headed towards the concept and topic of capitalism, which is going to start us off for part 3. Thanks again for joining us, and hope you listen to part 3. Thanks. Bye.